Welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast, your audio source for what's going on in the Chicago theater scene. This is the podcast for the week of August 20th, 2007, and on this episode we have an interview with Ron Hocking. He will be talking to Tom Williams about his show, The Men and Their Music. It's a really good interview, and it's also Ron's first podcast, so I know you don't want to miss it. Also on this episode, we of course have Chicago's theater news. So, get ready, Chicago. Let's talk theater.
Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. Our special guest this week is a man whose show I saw last week, and it was fantastic. It is totally different, and it's a great treat for a summer venue. It's Ron Hocking and his new show, The Men and Their Music. Hello, Ron.
Hello, Tom. How you doing?
Great.
This is my first podcast, so ring a bell or do something. I don't know.
All right, great. Well, all it is a taped interview. It's like you and I sitting in the bar and having a drink and talking about your life. And
all right, let's have a drink. Let's go down to the bar.
Sounds good. Ron, tell us about The Men and Their Music, how it emerged, because I thought it was just one of the most fantastic shows I've seen in a while. It had such high energy.
Yeah, thank you so much. You know, it was like, what was I going to do for a second act? Being the first act was His Way, a tribute to Frank Sinatra, and the show went on here at the Mercury Theater back in 1998. July of 1998 we opened, and we were here for 8 months, and then we went to another theater in Chicago. Lo and behold, we became one of the longest-running musicals in Chicago.
I think you were the musical variety show.
And so I was trying to figure out what I was going to do for a second act, a comeback. We had our own theater at NBC. For a couple of years.
Tell us about that show. Now, that was a Sinatra Rat Pack tribute, sort of?
Well, it was actually a tribute to Frank Sinatra. The arranger that did all the arrangements for me was a bass trombonist with Frank Sinatra, and his name was Bill Rogers, and we lost him about a year and a half ago. And Bill was a great guy and just absolutely loved the music. He loved the way I sang the songs, and we did a lot of the arranging over the phone because he lived in Las Vegas.
Arranging over the phone.
Yeah, we did the arrangements for the His Way show. The majority of the arrangements were done over the phone. I gave him the assignment. I told him I did not want him to copy or any of the arrangements of Nelson Riddle. I wanted him to make it his own, and so he did. We did, and if I didn't, and we talked about him in length over the phone, and we discussed, and he played a little piano, and we discussed where certain things were going. I even sent him on a couple of arrangements. I sent him a piano vocal with a piano player, and send it to him, and he would draw up the arrangement from there.
That's
he was
terrific.
A brilliant, brilliant orchestrator. And that show, as I said, became a real hit here in Chicago. And then I thought, well, what am I going to do? Because I've thought a lot about changing up the show. And when I thought about it, I just took a piece of paper and pencil and wrote down artists that I really liked: Ray Charles, Bobby Darin, Burt Bacharach, and then the wheel started turning, and I started to formulate a show that is now a two-act performance here at the Mercury Theater, and we've just extended again.
Great.
Through the end of October.
You're through the end of October
now.
Yeah,
through October 28th.
Very good. Congratulations on that.
Let the fans know.
Yes, I definitely will.
They're calling, always asking if we've extended, and the extension just hit the newspaper today.
All right, so you're combining your talents as a singer and as an arranger and a musician with another talent that really makes this act unique, and that's your ability to do impersonations.
Well, I'm a singer first.
Yeah. And, yes, you are.
And I enjoy singing. And part of my personality is that I like to do impressions. I do a segment in the show that explains how I got to start doing impressions, because I'm always asked, you know, how did you start doing impressions? Well, my dad used to do car trips. We used to go on car trips and we used to do impressions in the car while he'd listen to the radio. And he'd turn down the radio, or my mother turned down the radio, and he would do an impression of the artist, whether it be Perry Como or Billy Eckstein, or
sure, I remember Billy Eckstein,
Satchmo, Louis Armstrong, or, you know, gosh, Nat Cole.
And he was really good at it, huh?
He was very good at it. And so I listened to him. The first impression that I learned to do was Louis Armstrong. And
well, I went down to the St. James Infirmary.
Very good. Hello, Louis.
Yeah, right. So, in fact, the little story about Louis Armstrong being that it was the first commercial or first artist that I learned to do as an impression became a commercial for Citizen Watch.
And that's one of your daytime gigs, right?
Yeah. A national commercial. I've been a commercial singer and voiceover artist for over 30 years.
And people have told me you're considered one of the pros
in that business. Nice to hear.
Yes.
And so when I got the call to do the Louis Armstrong impression, it was from New York, and I put a tape together and I sent it out, and they had all these actors and musicians that were the majority of them that were black. And it ended up that the white guy from Chicago ended up getting the gig. The guy that played Louis Armstrong on Broadway was—I beat out the.
Is
beat
that
him
right?
Out. So it was kind of a feather in my cap and in my dad's cap too. So it was kind of fun to see his face when I got the job.
Well, not only do you do an excellent impression of these people, you sing in their style, but you take on their body mannerisms and you really sell it. I mean, it's incredible. And then you go from one to the other. It shows an incredible acting range and singing range.
Well, I studied as an actor too in New York at the Neighborhood Playhouse. And and I think if you're going to do an impression, you have to get into the skin of the artist that you're doing. How do you do that
when you go from one to the other? Because, I mean, you're doing over a dozen people in your show.
How do I do it? I don't really have a pat answer for you.
Okay.
I think about the artist's voice. I think about how they would move, and then I go from there.
So you get in the moment.
I just get in the moment and go with it. And I'll even go to YouTube, or I will go to see, you know, the artist's movements in a movie or on a computer, or read about the artist helps me because you
created an amazing illusion.
Well, Ray Charles had an addiction as a young artist, and that caused him to twitch and to move.
Yes,
in
I've seen
ways.
Him. Yes, yeah.
Like in the movie, mm-hmm. Ray, that was why he moved that way. And he also moved in certain ways when he was playing, because he would use his head as a conductor.
Oh, okay. And
as a conductor would use a baton.
He was also known as One Take Ray, too, right? I mean, he pretty much nailed it the first time when they're in a recording session.
Well, I couldn't speak for that, but maybe you know more about that than I do.
No,
I don't know.
That was the anecdote I knew about. But, I mean, you go from him, Bobby Darin, and you do a terrific Jimmy Durante.
Well, Durante is an old school impression that I learned a long time ago, and when I do this dedication to my dad, I throw in the explanation of how I started to do impressions, and we start off with Perry Como singing "It's Impossible," and then I go into Natalie Cole, and then I Nat Cole, and then I do Natalie
yeah, then you
Cole,
do Natalie,
and then
yeah.
I do Natalie.
Yeah,
that's a
cute bit.
And throw in Jimmy Durante, and we end up with Louis Armstrong, and it's just a little retrospective of some memories that I had as a kid. You know, I started in Chicago on TV.
Did you really?
on TV on a show that was called the Morris B. Sachs Amateur Hour.
Yes, I remember. I do remember that. Morris B. Sachs Amateur Hour, yeah.
I was only 4 years old. And
Did you win?
I was a prize winner.
Good.
And I sang a Mario Lanza song that was actually written by Sammy Kahn. It was called Because You're Mine. And
that's right.
Sammy Kahn wrote that song. And I didn't realize that Sammy wrote that until I went to see Sammy's one-man show when he was here in Chicago. And I got the book of songs. He autographed it for me. And here I am, did my first theater production as a tribute to Frank Sinatra. And he wrote so many songs for
Frank Sinatra.
Yes,
he did. He was one of the great Tin Pan Alley writers.
He really was.
Yeah, yeah. And those guys could crank them out. You give them an order for a song, from what I've heard. Guys like Sammy Kahn, yeah, you'd say, I need this kind of song. He'd, you know, a few sentences, and a couple days later, he'd have it done.
Well, he'd have the lyrics, and he would work with the pianist or who was doing the music, or, you know, because he was primarily a lyricist, but he also did some music writing as well, but that probably helped.
Mm-hmm. Well, so we go on now with, so the Men of the Music is this.
So I thought I'd do a celebration of a lot of the artists that inspired me over the years, and that's why I call it a celebration of the men in their music. The men are the singers, the songwriters.
Yeah, because you do Burt Bacharach, a whole montage of Burt Bacharach, which is great stuff.
The legendary performers, Sammy, Dean, and Frank, and also the personalities like Dick Clark.
Yes,
like Dick Clark, and we do a segment on American Bandstand and a couple of the songs that I from the artists that were on the American Bandstand. And then I listened to an awful lot of radio when I was growing up because I knew at a young age I wanted to be in show business, and so I watched a lot of television and listened to radio and listened to these artists and listened and watched how they would sing on TV and listened how they delivered a song on the radio. And
you know, it's amazing how many people have done that, but how few really carry out the dream. There's a lot of people that do that. You know, they're dreaming and the wannabes.
Right, right.
And you're one of the exceptions who went and made it happen.
Well, if I hadn't started as a kid on TV, and music being a part of my life, I learned to play piano from the nuns in Catholic school. In fact, they used to send me around class to class singing, because once they found out that I was on more than one television show here in Chicago.
So you're the celebrity.
I was a celebrity as a little kid, because I had probably a half a dozen TV shows under my belt before I went into grammar school. And so the nuns had a feast with me, sending me around to sing for all the different classes and classrooms. And
so you got rid of your stage fright quite young, huh?
Well, as you get older, it's a different kind of stage fright. It's wondering, if you're producing the show like I am, you're wondering if the lights and the sound are going to operate the way you want them to, and is everybody going to play and do and their part. And so I'm really kind of the producer, director, as well as the star of the show. So it puts a little bit of pressure on, I'd say.
But that's good, because ultimately the star of the show has responsibility for it anyhow. So you just took it by the horns and created it.
No matter what happens when you're out there in live theater, it's the moment.
And I'll tell you, the show reminds me of a lot of those great shows in the 50s, 60s, and 70s that were on television, the variety shows.
Right.
And I think it plays to two audiences, or actually more, but certainly plays to anyone over 50 who knows the music. Yeah,
all the boomers.
Which I am a member. But it also is terrific for young people who don't know this music and really don't know a lot of the entertainers. You're keeping the legacy going and introducing a whole nother audience to, you know.
That's right, and we get a lot of college as well as on up fans that come in to see the show and are very surprised. And when I put together the His Way show, I said, where are you going to go and see a big band on stage?
That's right. That's
so
true.
That in itself is an attraction. Because
yes,
if you're going to put a show together, you have to have something to attract the people. And in this show, I said, well, what am I going to do differently? We have two great backup singers, Kathy Sperrenberger and Lorraine Denham, that are working with me. A great band. Some of the guys have been with me for probably 9 years, almost 10 years.
I mean, they really rock. They create a much bigger sound than seven musicians.
Yeah. And so the horn section is great, as well as the rhythm section. We put out a lot of music, and we turn on a dime.
Your piano player is fabulous.
Mike Hanko is the greatest, and so he has been with me probably the longest, and he does a terrific job on piano and on synth and triggering all of the synth elements that we need for the show.
So one of the things, besides the big band sound and the swing sound, which you do fabulous, I mean, you guys do pop and R&B
and
all the different genres.
Because that's a part of who I am as an artist. These are all the people that made an impression on me. So no pun intended. I sometimes do an impression of them.
Yes, you do.
And,
well, that's why it is a tribute. Yeah.
Well, it Sinatra was the tribute.
Yeah. Okay.
This is more of a celebration of lot of different artists, music, and I use the word celebration because we're really, really, truly happy to be up there on the stage delivering this music. And the variety that we can bring to the audiences that come into the Mercury Theater.
The response on the press opening night that I was at was amazing. Not only among us boomers with the gray hair, but there were several large groups of people,
not younger,
20s, early 30s, that were just had them eating out of your hand. They wanted to come on stage and dance with you. They were jiving and they loved it.
And you know, when I went to see Jersey Boys, the energy in the show, there was a lot of energy in the show, Jersey Boys, in the audience. There was a lot of audience energy. And I think that when I do all these different artists, and it's not totally impressions because, I'm a singer first, but it's my personality to want to do a voice or two. We do Johnny Carson.
Yes, you did a fabulous Johnny Carson.
I got to tell you, it was so hot in Los Angeles today.
How hot was it?
All right. we never forget the bit, do we? It was so hot that I saw a squirrel icing his nuts.
Very good.
So we have a lot of fun.
Yeah, you do. You mix it with some comedy, and it's a very, very polished show. How long did it take you to develop this show and to get it to the point where it's at now?
You know, I'm always developing different acts for corporate events and for one-nighters. So it's always an ongoing thing with me to try to come up with something different. And I'm already making notes on what I'm going to do next.
Okay. So if someone were to come back to see the show, because you're the kind of show... Like my girlfriend was at the show, and she absolutely loved it. She got on the phone, and she's one of your greatest fans. And she was telling all her friends to come see it, and then they're going to put a couple of groups together. So it's the kind of show you can see more than once.
I think so. We get a lot of repeat business because I always switch up the show. We're doing something different.
I mean, the core stays the same, but you do... little twist
well,
and turns.
We'll switch out songs.
Okay.
We'll drop in. One of the highlights that we drop in is the Conte Partito, which is Andrea Bocelli's song that he made famous, the Italian aria.
Let me comment on that.
Yes.
The more you get, first I'm saying, wow, this guy's quite an impressionist, and he can really sing well, and geez, he nailed that one. And I, the thought was in my mind, and you must have known this, it was like hanging out there. Can this guy really sing big time stuff? And then you blew us away with that number.
Well, it's
and in Italian.
It's a marvelous song.
It is.
And to be able to deliver something like that on stage at the end of the show, you know, we're doing practically 2 hours.
Yes, you are.
On stage.
Yeah, and you work hard.
We have an intermission.
But you're literally on stage all the way through it. Yeah.
That's right.
and have that energy to reach back and be able to nail that, because that's quite a song. You made a believer out of me with that one.
Well, thank you. It's a labor of love, and you know, I'm often asked, why am I not in Las Vegas? Why am I not there? Well, Chicago is my hometown. I grew up not too far from your neighborhood on the northwest side.
Cragen neighborhood.
Right. Yeah. And so Chicago has become my Las Vegas. And we have a room in Rosemont that's going to open up in 08 at a new hotel. And we'll have to do another podcast.
Yes,
to talk
we
about
certainly
that.
Will. I'm sure I'll be at the, because I cover all those openings, sure.
Right.
Oh, that's cool. And that's a great place.
It's out in Rosemont.
Out in Rosemont, right. Yeah, because that's getting to be a nice area.
A real mecca of a lot of entertainment.
So you're going to be it's going to be like your permanent home kind of thing?
We're talking about it, yes.
Okay.
So,
boy, that would be terrific. And that's a good location. Everyone can get there from anywhere.
Plenty of parking.
All right, let's do a little commercial now for your present show. You're at the Mercury Theater.
All right, we're here through October the 28th, and the Mercury Theater is located at 3745 North on Southport. It's between Irving Park and Addison. We're right next to many restaurants.
Yeah, this is a terrific area to come in, and you park once, you can have dinner, come see the show,
right,
and then top off the evening with a few cocktails.
Cullen's, Blue Bayou,
yeah.
Take Five, a number of great Asian restaurants. There's another Argentinian restaurant down the street. I don't know the name of it, but
I don't either.
There's a lot of restaurants.
Yeah, it's a good area, and it's a nice, comfortable house with nice big stage.
It is.
But the sound you guys create, it's just, I mean, the energy level. I mean, quite frankly, I had not seen you before. I did not see your Sinatra show. And when Ted and the fellows from Margie Korshak said, you got to come see this show, you know, I trust their judgment. And I look, and you had me, as soon as it was Sinatra, that you know, you do Sinatra, and I asked around.
Well, that's at the end of the show.
Yeah,
yeah.
But I mean, that was your background. I said, well, that's fine, because if that's all he does, that's enough for me. I'm there.
Okay.
And then to discover, you know, the wide range of what you did was a pleasant surprise. And not only that, there was a few actors in town, big time actors, you know, who don't get to see a lot of shows because they're always working. It just happened, you know, the summer, they're in between shows, and they got to see it, and boy, they were really impressed.
So that's always a nice.
Yeah, it's nice.
Nice when that happens.
And I always ask them, I said, do you ever think you could do a show like that? They go, whatever that guy gets paid, he should get paid double. He says, I could never do that. And that's a legitimate question for our younger audiences, because we have a lot of, you know, actors and theater people who listen to these podcasts. One of the obvious questions, how do you sustain your voice, you know, through 2 hours, you know, six or eight shows a week?
I don't talk for 3 days. You know, I go out on the golf course.
Okay.
And
you get away from it when you're not
I
working.
I keep it low key. Yeah. But I'm in the office because I'm the producer of the show.
Yeah, then you
I'm
wear the other hat. Yeah.
Doing all the business side of it as well. And if I was to say anything to actors or performers, is that it's don't wait for the phone to ring, because sometimes it doesn't ring.
You have to make it happen.
You have to make it happen.
Yeah. But I mean, in terms of the physical preparation and the, you know, the technique to keep your voice up at these levels.
Well, I've been blessed with pretty decent chops, and I did study with a couple of voice teachers in Chicago that I think the key is to warm up and warm up effectively. Don't push too hard. Just like an athlete would warm up and throw a ball, you have to warm up your voice. And I've been blessed with the talent to be able to manipulate my voice in a lot of different directions.
Yeah, you sure do it.
So
I've never seen anyone with your range.
I have to. It's sort of like a Cirque du Soleil vocalist, you know, that can turn himself inside out and still carry out.
So it is technique too, in terms of doing the warm ups and so forth.
It is to get all of the resonance from your voice.
Because I've heard young actors who really don't know and say, "Well, I don't really need a warm up. You just
there was something in the paper recently that talked about teachers having problems with their voice because they don't warm up and they're talking all day.
Yeah, lectures, particularly when they're trying to project out to a class. Yeah, that's true. I was a teacher.
I haven't warmed up yet. My chops are tired just talking with you now. I've got lozenges here. I've got tea. I've got all kinds of things that hot water and lemon and just to
sustain,
open it up.
You've got to love doing this because there's no way you can sustain the kind of energy you sustain 2 hours every night, eight shows a week.
Right.
Are you having fun?
Yeah, I am. I'm probably the happiest when I'm working and the saddest when I'm not. So it's the reverse of people that I've grown up with that are working and they're going, they'd rather be on the golf course. I'd rather be working.
Yeah, because you don't really work. You're working is really having fun.
That's what everybody thinks.
I don't mean in the sense of it's not hard and you don't put a lot of energy. You certainly do that. But in the sense that it's a labor of love.
Well, yes, it is a labor. It has to be a labor of love with me. Otherwise, I couldn't do it. If I didn't love it, I couldn't do it. And plus, it's what I do. And so
that's your profession.
That's my profession. There are days. Are there days when I don't want to do it? Yes. Are there days when I can't wait to get here? Yes. The good outweighs the bad.
It seems like you feed off the audiences too.
Any performer does.
Yeah. And at least the opening night audience that I saw, there was such energy in that. This happens every night. I would assume you. Because you win the audiences over pretty
fast.
You
have to go out to win the audience. If you don't, and you're just going through the motions then.
Mm-hmm.
You have to go out and touch them in some way, some special way. And I'm delighted that when I do. I mean, there are nights sometimes that you don't feel you're touching them. And then the end of the night, they are up on their feet.
Yeah. Have you ever anyone come up on stage or any funny stories about because you do really turn you do really
well,
ignite the audience.
I bring people on stage, but I only allow them up there when they're invited.
Yeah, otherwise that can
right.
get rough.
No, I've never had anyone interrupt the show.
That's good.
No.
Because sometimes they can get...
No streakers.
No. and that's not an invite, but I'll tell you... So your plan is to run this show until, what was the date again, October? It's extended?
October the 28th. We're extended.
Okay.
And keep watching the newspapers because
in
another
site.
6 weeks.
Yeah, we'll have
my site, ronhawking.com.
Okay. You also have at least one CD available, correct?
Right. There are two CDs available on the website. And... I did a movie this year.
Okay, tell us about that.
It's a movie with Dennis Quaid. It's called The Express. It won't come out until in 08, probably fall of 08, because it's a football movie, and it's about the first black Heisman Trophy winner, Ernie Davis.
Okay.
And I played the part of the he came from Syracuse University.
That's
so
right.
I was the Syracuse University football announcer, and I announced like four games in the movie.
Oh, that had to be fun.
That was great fun.
So you had to...
They cut my hair down real short and, on the sides because the time period was 1958.
Okay.
But he was an amazing athlete.
Yes, he was.
And he was very special. And it's kind of a Brian song, I guess, because he died of leukemia at 23.
Wow.
That's so weird.
And so that's a departure for you. Had to be fun, though, doing a film. Huh?
It was great fun. And Dennis Quaid is the star and...
top actor.
Yeah. I can't wait to see it. Can't wait to see how much of me is left on the screen after the
editing process. Yeah, I always hear that from film actors, yeah. And, of course, that process is totally different than what you're doing on stage. But that's a nice way of augmenting... keeping your
staying in the arts.
Yeah, staying in the arts. Yeah, and you've had a phenomenal career as a voiceover.
Yeah,
tell us about some of the commercials you've done.
Well, I started out doing a spot for Union Pacific Railroad. It was my first singing spot, and back in the '70s, I was that was the first spot, and then unbeknownst to me, they liked what I did, so I continued to get calls, and it was, I was just in my early 20s, and it turned out to be an amazing career. We ended up doing, I was called and fortunate enough to be called on all the big spots, the anthem spots that we don't hear anymore, like Fly the Friendly Skies of United and Kellogg's Apple Jacks and Schlitz beer Schlitz malt liquor. We did so many spots out of Chicago that it was amazing. It was an amazing career, and
you still do them?
Well, not as much as I used to, because the business has changed so much.
Yeah, a lot of it's the big name stars are getting in.
Well, they're not singing, but they're doing a lot of voiceovers.
The voices, yeah,
and I do some of that. And this year was the movie. So it was an extremely busy summer with the movie that we shot and then getting this opened. And then we went to Purdue University and had a huge show at Purdue that was with a 65-piece orchestra, 20-piece choir. It was for the outgoing president of Purdue. And it was amazing. We did all the Nelson Riddle kind of symphonic arrangements that Jeff Lindberg transcribed, and he conducted the show. Jeez. And it was one of those huge one-nighters with the three-hour rehearsal. We drove into Lafayette, Indiana, did the rehearsal the next day. It was, you know, an all-day sucker on the stage and the speeches in between, because they were bidding their
that's quite an event
well to the president of Purdue, who did a fabulous job in the time that he was there. I forget his name, but when I woke up the next morning, went downstairs to the hotel, the front page was he and his wife in color, and it was the event that we worked the night
cool
before.
That sounds like a lot of fun. Last question in the interest of time.
All right.
Where does Ron Hawking see himself in 5 years? This is my standard question. What, you know, what's your future going to be?
Wow, you know, maybe another shot in a movie. Maybe in 5 years we will be at the Rosemont location, continuing to make music for Chicago. And I would love to work and put this idea out to the universe. I'd love to work in Atlantic City and Las Vegas and be able to add that to my repertoire a couple of times a year.
It's a crime that you haven't worked Las Vegas. And
I've worked there a couple
Atlantic
of times, but
I mean,
not
it,
on a regular
yeah, on a regular,
a
basis.
Regular basis to be rotated in and out. But
yeah,
even that nightclub business, the casino business, has changed a lot.
Okay.
You know, you have to go in and really produce the show and rent the room, and they call it four-walling.
Four-walling,
So it's not, you're not, they're not calling you up. So there's...
It's a tough... That makes
a real... Tough
well,
game.
If you after the Rosemont, you get that whole thing down, you'll probably be ready for
Maybe.
It.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so
it.
Much. And folks, go see the show. It's at the Mercury Theater. Ron Hawking is a fabulous entertainer. It's a great show for a date show and for groups from the office or from the church or the synagogue. And folks, remember, thank you for listening. Remember, go see a play this week.
Hello, Chicago. Welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, bringing you Chicago's theater news for the week of August 20th, 2007. Dirty Dancing, the classic story on stage, will be making its U.S. premiere here in Chicago at the Cadillac Palace Theater on September 2nd of 2008. The classic story, which will be here for a limited engagement, is a coming-of-age love story involving the talented and headstrong dancer Johnny Castle and France's baby houseman. Dirty Dancing, the classic story on stage, is currently playing to sold-out houses in London's West End and also in Hamburg, Germany. This is, of course, following a sell-out premiere in Australia and New Zealand, and now they're finally coming to the States and coming up here to Chicago. Writer and creator of the show, Eleanor Bergstein, was able to add more baby and Johnny scenes to the show. She also added a little bit more about the family, more songs to the musical, and of course, more dancing. For more information on Dirty Dancing, the classic story on stage, click on over to DirtyDancingOnStage.com or stay tuned right here to Talk Theater in Chicago's news podcast. Family Guy Live, which is the live stage version of the animated series The Family Guy, will be performed at the Chicago Theater on September 15th. Family Guy is, of course, an Emmy Award-winning show by Seth MacFarlane. Family Guy Live includes the cast performing some of the most memorable musical numbers from the series, as well as a question and answer session with the cast and the creators of the series following the performances. Tickets are now available for Family Guy Live. You can, of course, find more information by going to the official website, familyguy.com, or by clicking on Theater in Chicago's Coming Soon section. And on a sadder note, we would like to express our sincere condolences to the families of Joe Van Slyke and Diane Van Lente. Joe Van Slyke was a veteran actor of Chicago for over 3 decades. He died at the age of 55 of lung cancer in his home last Monday. Joe Van Slyke was an artistic associate of the Remy Bumpo Theater Company. He will be greatly missed. Also, Diane Van Lente, who was the executive producer of the Drury Lane Theaters here in Chicago. She died at the age of 57 last August 13th of ovarian cancer. This, sadly, was mere weeks after the death of her father, Tony DeSantis, who, of course, is well known for founding the Drury Lane Theaters. Both of these theater artists will be greatly missed and always remembered. Well, thank you very much for listening to this episode of the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. We have come to the end of the news, but before we let you go, it's time for your Shakespeare Quote of the Week. The following quote comes from As You Like It, Act 2, Scene 7. We are not all alone unhappy. Well, I can't thank you enough for listening to this podcast. Remember, we are here every Monday with a new episode ready to stick in your ears. So until we meet again, I'm your host, Dustin Moat. Go see some theater, Chicago. Well, thank you for listening to this episode of the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. I would like to thank Ron Hocking for giving us the honor of interviewing him this week. I would also like to thank Tom Williams and Mark Meyer. Without them, this podcast would not be possible. And also, I would like to thank you, our listening audience, because without you, this show would certainly not be possible. Remember, everybody, we are here every Monday with a new episode ready for your listening pleasure. So, until next time, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you, Chicago, that theater's happening. Get out there. Don't miss it.